The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. Are you ready to create a life that's intentional and dynamic? Welcome to The Intentional Spirit with your host, Reverend Temple Hayes.
And welcome, everyone, and thank you so much for being with us. As I like to say, to remind myself and all of us listening, tuning in either now or later, that it takes a really brave and courageous person to be intentional. An intentional person is someone that's not waiting for the world to change and not waiting until they have an opening in their calendar. An intentional spirit is someone that keeps walking in the direction that is being pulled by their soul. A person that continues to allow themselves to be engaged and involved and, you know, often be authors, such as the case today. We have the wonderful Linda Martella-Witsit and her incredible, beautiful daughter, Alicia, with us. And we're talking about their new book, This Life Is Yours. Welcome to the show and thank you for being here.
It's a thrill to be with you today, Temple, and for everyone who's listening.
Absolutely. And I would love for you to, because often we have people listening that, you know, are thinking about being an author and thinking about, you know, putting their name out there in some form or some way. And how did this come about with the two of you?
Well, I'll start by just saying that I had been being pressed by my publisher, Hampton Roads Publishing Company, to write a third book. And in my first year of serving Silent Unity at Unity headquarters, I just didn't have any space, you know, in my calendar or in my head, really, to think about it. But as time went on, I thought, well, the biggest number one reason people ask for prayer support or spiritual support of any kind is for some kind of healing. And so this became really a consuming thought in my mind, and I started to develop some ideas, some themes were emerging, and I shared them with Alicia. One day, I started to get really excited about the possibilities, and I watched her facial expression as I was talking to her, and I'm going to let her finish because she then took it from there.
Yeah, I was just so inspired and in tune with the message that my mom was going to be sharing with the world. And I had just come off of, 2 years of really dedicated time healing, spiritually, healing physically. So it was on my radar, and I just started contributing thoughts, and I guess it probably just came off as a running page of things that she needed to include in this book. And then she said, well, do you want to write the book with me? So that's really how it started and became a pretty great working relationship outside of mother and daughter.
it's just beautiful. And all of you, you can go to the letters UR-divine.com. And you can actually watch a video of the two of them together. They look like they're, you know, headed to become actresses at some point as well. So we'll see how that unfolds, and we can remember the early days of when they first started with this book. Well, I was really tuned in and turned on about this book because something that I've been evolving and kind of chewing on, if you will, for a long time is that, and you know, many people have said it different ways, but it's like, you know, when you come to realize that the world is not broken and we are not broken, and yet we are trained or programmed in our society that we're broken, because if we're broken, then we buy products, we can be herded in certain directions, we are more vulnerable, and, you know, things like that. And I love the book, This Life Is Yours, because just the title is like a wake-up call. You know, this life is yours, you know, and when we look at, you know, Myrtle Fillmore, thank heavens that she knew that in within her being of what she believed about life, that she was whole, because we wouldn't be on Unity right now. We wouldn't be doing what we're doing if she hadn't come from that way, right?
Yeah, and it is really, you're so right that we have been given this as a fundamental message about our identity, and it's just a false reality, this idea that we're broken, that something could be missing, wrong, or broken about us. And really, even world religions have sprung up in some ways to try to address that issue, and have in some ways, probably I'm sure unintentionally, have kind of fomented that idea, kept it spinning.
Absolutely. I mean, when you're a child in certain levels of religiosity, and you're told you are an original sin and all those kind of things, that's a lot to grasp when you're, 5 and 6 years old, to say the least. So, the passion that both of you were feeling together would be an awareness and awakening for people to come from more of this place of power, of being empowered. Why don't one of you or both of you talk about when you think of this vision as someone that is proud to be a human being, what power and the inner power, what that's about?
Oh, wow. Okay. I can take this. I think, you know, we were talking about all of the rules and the kind of guidelines that society presents to us. And I mean, I can speak for myself and probably for my mom as well, that we just don't want to play by those rules. Never really have. And there had to be a way for me while dealing with chronic illness, things that were happening in my body that I couldn't just ignore, but I had to find a way to kind of claim my power in that and say, yes, this is happening, but this is not the whole of who I am. So it was an opportunity to look back, look at those moments in my life where I felt like my shiniest, best self. And what did that look like? What was going on at that time? So it was really about processing, learning about myself, and becoming empowered to say, this is who I am. This is all parts of me, and nothing's wrong. Nothing's wrong with that. We're hearing more people be able to talk about mental health and things that we just never really quite talked about as a society before. And that is the empowerment, that being able to share what we're really dealing with in our lives.
Oh, absolutely. And I trust that, people heard, the way that you language that, because it's as your mom will tell you in our work, people misunderstand, I think, what our theology is, meaning what we believe about the principles and what we teach. Is what I heard you say in the way that you said it, is I realized that I was having this as an experience, but I am the totality of me is not that experience. And I can put effort into changing the experience over time or instantaneously, but you're not saying, oh, this experience is never happening. And I think that that's a deep misunderstanding about our teaching, is that people say, well, we're not supposed to say we're having this. I'm being negative. It's like, no, I'm being like a real person in a real human suit. And to address something and acknowledge it simply means that it is something that is happening. I don't have to pull it in my gut. I don't have to pull it in my solar plexus, but it's definitely something that's real, so that I can move forward to that coming over or overcoming it. And that's really what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, Temple, you're really speaking to us. I mean, in this book, we really made a very definite, intentional point of kind of dispelling the mythology of what's come to be called spiritual bypass or malpractice, right?
Yes.
This idea of saying, what's going on in your stinking thinking that you created this thing in your life? And I mean, Alicia will tell you that, you know, being raised in Unity and as a YOUer, as a teenager, some of the former YOUers have been together in a weekend event, and they were talking about this, how the interpretation that they sort of internalized about mm-hmm. the power of our minds is more about how we're supposed to never talk about something bad happening. And I just find that a sorrowful thought that's the message that we gave unintentionally, and that we're correcting that now. We're reminding people that it's important to acknowledge the facts and even your feelings of what's going on, but that's not the end of the story, that's all.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, exactly. And for me, the only way I could explain it to myself in discernment, to conceptually and in my heart understand it, is I just made the assumption that a lot of our early folks came from traditional religiosity with that fundamental core of something's wrong, feel guilty, and you did something and you're not in favor of a higher power. You've done something, and either if God doesn't get you from the judge book, then the devil already has. So I just figured that a lot of that came, you know, washing over to a place of, you know, making these identifications in a way that really it dismisses our humanity. You know, and I feel I was fortunate that I had strong teachers early on. You know, my teacher would say, you can spend years of your life trying to figure out why you got that headache, or you could just go take a couple of aspirins and be done with it. You know, I don't know, Linda, if you were at, I know you've been to many conventions, and with travel things, I haven't been to as many, but were you there in Phoenix when a native elder came from one of the tribes, I think, like in Flagstaff or something, and he said that in that tribe, they didn't even teach people the word why? Did you hear that? Were you there?
I was there. I'm not recalling that specific moment, but I love that. You know, we address that question why in the book, and like you, we conclude that that question why, you know, really leads us to self-blame. First of all, we either blame God or we blame ourselves, and mm-hmm. and neither of those things are fruitful for us. And so, you know, we take a fresh look at the law of attraction and the law, what we call in Unity, the law of mind or the law of mind action, to really kind of pull that apart and dispel some of the unfortunate kind of interpretations of it that are pretty popular, you know.
Absolutely. I am so glad that the two of you are addressing this, because it's been due a while. I mean, many of us are out in the field, you know, teaching these kind of things, but it's very powerful that you have, you know, created this essence of a book in this way. And would you say that did either one of you have an epiphany from your connection with each other in certain subject matters that you were addressing?
Oh, several. Several.
Good. I mean, well, we've got plenty of time.
It's ever evolving, you know, just as this healing happens over and over again, so does our understanding and expansion of our relationship as mother and daughter. You know, we dealt with some pretty tough things that had happened in both of our lives that we had to bring up and really dig into to write this book. And So it led to uncomfortable conversations, feelings, and I think that we gave each other a lot of room to process those feelings as we needed to individually, but also together to sit down and talk about those experiences. And it's expanded even beyond just the two of us. You know, we're having those conversations with my brother, with my dad, with extended family members and friends. So it's really just kind of opened up the pathways of communication, at least in my mind.
Boy, you know, you're so right on about that, Elise.
What about you, Miss Linda?
Yeah, for me, you know, we've had a pretty solid and strong relationship anyway, but you know, to become co-authors, there was a place where we had to have a different kind of relationship, a professionalized part of our relationship, for the mutuality and the respect, the mutual respect for each of our own styles of approaching this book and writing and our own contributions to it, you know, our own pace and style and that sort of thing. So all of that was part of it as well. But I'm with Alicia in that the deeper emotional kind of releases that were possible as we encountered, you know, parts of our shared history that we didn't know about each other, for example, and places where we intersected. And frankly, you know, anyone who's read my other two books knows that I write a lot of what is personal. You know, I use my personal life experience as teaching, part of the teaching. And we did that exact same thing in here. In fact, it's kind of raw in some places because of that, because it is a book about healing. But we see that as a strength. I mean, I feel absolutely triumphant in being able to be that clear and no longer have these things kind of under the surface. They're brought out into the light of day, and that's where healing really happens. So for me, it's just been a joyful thing, and it's wonderful to see Alicia take her place as a messenger of important spiritual truths.
Yeah, that's powerful. It's so beautiful to hear your, you know, your ebb and flow and, you know, that. And I think that also is, you know, a reflection of today's times. It's like, you know, as I was saying the other day, for those of you that long to be a mystic, well, now you are. Because this is the most mysterious time that we've ever lived, and what we don't know. For sure. And what it's going to look like. Right. And so that's, we are having an opportunity to live on those real tiny thin branches, for sure. And that's the beauty of your work here, is it's timeless. You know, I love books that are timeless, that they, wherever you are or whatever's happened, you know, you can still using this material to develop your core. And I think that's sometimes what's so important for people to grasp spiritually, is your, you know, our blood, if you work with a microscopist that does the blood, does your live blood test, they can tell you incrementally within every 10 years what has happened to you. Have you ever become aware of that, either one of you, that they, people that do that with live blood testing? I've had it done. And the guy said to me, you have a thing in your shoulder, and it happened when you were 24, and you have this thing that happened when you were young on your, well, I'm still young, but it happened with your knee, and you had some anger around it. And I said, yeah, my grandfather ran over me on the way to take me to church, and he saw that in my blood, okay? In my blood, okay? He didn't know anything about me. And it's likened to that same way as a tree, that you can measure the tree trunk and see all the weather and the things have occurred and, you know, all of that. And the work you're doing is talking about the impact of this life is yours, and be empowered about it. You know, get ahead of it. Be proactive instead of reactive. For those of you that are just tuning in, we're talking to Linda Martellett-Whitsitt and her daughter, Alicia. And Linda, Reverend Linda of Unity, has written a number of books, and her daughter has joined her in this one. And you can go to the website with the letters UR, the letter UR-divine.com, and find out all about them and how to stay in touch. So, measuring that core and creating that sense about your well-being and just becoming more conscious about it. But there was something that one of you said earlier that, you know, it sometimes surprises me when we talk about infinity and we talk about, you know, new thought, and we believe that, you know, we're here many lifetimes. When we try to put things in a box about this particular time, you know what I mean? Because we're still influenced by so many factors other than what you were talking about with the spiritual mind malpractice. There's so much, such a broader way to live than staying in that one window.
Yeah, we really write about the value of our story, you know, like reflecting on our own past as we know it, reflecting on the different things that really impact us, our own feelings, which of course change. And we remind, I'm reminded just from my own work on my own healing of things, is that, you know, feelings isn't something that we try to deny or let go of, because the feelings are messengers and they have a message for us and they have a purpose. In other words, we don't have to eradicate them, but we certainly don't want them to lead us either. The feelings are not leaders, they're followers, or they're messengers but not directors. And that's just one of the many influences, though. And these things happen, of course, unconsciously. The impact that that our previous experience has on us, the impact of the world around us, the collective consciousness, thought processes, our own religious upbringing. I mean, you know, right here in this single lifetime, let alone whatever other experience you might have had in the timeless aspects of eternity, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We're so multidimensional, and I find that very exciting, you know, of learning something new every day. I mean, I say every day that when I stop being a student, I don't need to be talking out loud to people in a public forum, that's for sure. Because I just learn, you know, all the time. I can remember being in Brazil, you know, going before a healer, and I had just gone and got a physical. I think I've had like four in my whole lifetime, because it's not really something I do, but I had just had a physical, and they said I was the healthiest client, patient they have. And I get before this healer, and, you know, he says, operation. I'm like, operation? What are you talking about? That Diane Scribner-Clevenger was behind me. And I said, well, I didn't think I had anything wrong with me. She said, you're going to learn what is right with you. And I just, you know, just that little shift, just that little multidimensional way of, oh, yeah. You know, it just changes everything. And what I'm getting and what I hear is that's what this book is going to do for the people that are willing to make an investment within themselves to understand the deepening of what it means that, you know, this life is yours, is that they're going to work with having the ability to reframe some things that, and I think that's the thing that, you know, when we let go of that, it's supposed to be hard, that it can be one sentence and it can change your life forever.
That's exactly it, Temple. I was just thinking, you know, going back to that, I didn't have that kind of testing with blood, but Mom, do you remember what that testing was I did that they hooked you up to the electrodes and I don't remember what that was called, but
the biofeedback, the bio,
biofeedback.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had such a powerful experience with that because, again, I'm sitting in this mindset of this is chronic illness. This is something that I can't be changed, and I have to figure out how to navigate for the rest of my life. And sitting through one of those sessions, and she's reading me back what my body is saying. And my body is saying I'm a healthy person. Like, talk about that for affirmation. And it changed everything. It changed everything because a lot of what's going on in my body is not health related, it's trauma related. So once I'm able to break through that and revisit myself at those times in my life, because they ask questions like, I'm showing a lot of pain or something coming up with your dad around the age of 12 to 15. And you're like, let's process that. Let's unpack that a little bit. But it was just, it felt so freeing. And that's what it is now. It's just everything in my life feels open to exploring what's going on, but not sitting with that pain and that feeling of lack that I had held on to for so long.
That's so powerful, that. Alicia. That's right. We use a Velcro for products. We don't use Velcro on ourselves, do we? Mm-hmm. Everyone, we're tuning in to talking about the book, This Life Is Yours. I love it when you tune in with us, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back to The Intentional Spirit with Reverend Temple Hayes.
And welcome back, everybody. And I'm so glad you're here. And it's just always a pleasure to serve you. On behalf of Unity and on behalf of great wisdom and knowledge in the world today, that we're able to feature such great people such as today. I do want to remind you that you can go to firstunity.org or templehayes.com and learn more about what we're doing and what we're up to and the kind of summits that we're involved in, that in some cases and retreats that include Unity Village, as well as we have programs where we really teach and integrate true spiritual leadership. So love to have you check that out. And all that information is on the website. And so today we're talking with Linda Martella-Witsit and her daughter Alicia, who have come up with this amazing idea that kind of unraveled in their own consciousness and in their heart. The book called This Life Is Yours. You can go to the website with the letters ur-divine.com and find out more about the book. And there's workbooks with the other books that Linda has done. So just a great place to shop and experience and be committed to yourself. Now's the time as a mystic to step in front of things and be proactive about your life. So I just love having the two of you, and I think it would be fun for the two of you to ping pong back and forth and tell us more about this wonderful journey and project that you've been on as a mother-daughter, and in addition to that, people with wisdom.
Well, we're happy to do that. You know, I think what we might start, Alicia, is just defining what we mean by healing and wholeness, because these are huge, you know, huge themes in the book, and it might be helpful to understand exactly how we understand healing and wholeness, right? So what would you say about healing?
Well, so the biggest thing for me about healing, where we're coming from, is taking the shift off of the fact that healing is a journey that we're going on. We use that word, and it just doesn't quite fit well with me, because when you're journeying, you're expecting that there's a place you're getting to, right? And healing is not that. There's no destination. There's no endpoint. So it's an ongoing, ongoing awakening to the wholeness that we have always been.
Yeah, and I can just imagine somebody listening thinking to themselves, oh, you mean this is forever? Well, it's just as forever like brushing your teeth every day is forever, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be a big deal. It's just that healing is something. There's always something that, there's always something going on with us, right? When we have a twitch or feeling of, like, I don't feel at ease with myself today, what's that about? We call that healing, and there's no kind of hierarchy of healing if you think about it, right?
And it's also taking out the judgment that we place on ourselves for saying, why is this coming up for me again? Well, it's coming up for you again because you're evolving and your understanding of yourself changes within that. So to take away that criticism that we have, that, man, I thought I was over this. Well,
right,
I mean,
right.
It's not going to happen. That's a human condition, right? That we're here and we're going to continue to learn until we're no longer here.
Yeah, and when we've gotten this one thing figured out, there'll be something else next, right? I mean, there's just always...
Absolutely.
And that's just really indicative of an alive person, because being alive, the power of divine life is a forward, onward, upward thrust of evolution. And so congratulations if you're healing, right? That's what's going on here. And we also try to define healing as things like well-being, right? Or wholeness is a state of well-being. Wholeness is that eternalness of us, that part of us that cannot be damaged, cannot be diminished, right? Or cannot die even. That of us, that spirit of us, is our wholeness. And we like to define healing as awakening to the fact that we can be in a state of well-being, that we are free, you know, free from this thought that that we should be able to accomplish it once and for all, for example.
I also love that the aspects of healing that we also discussed early on in the book, and healing is nurturing. Like, I would say if you're going to start anywhere, it's with that attention to self, and it's almost that unapologetic devotion to being well, to being one with your divine and your human nature, and knowing that those can coexist and that they need to coexist, right? I just feel like it's such a powerful thing, a powerful breakthrough moment for people who are not naturally self-nurturers. They're the people that take care of everyone else. Well, what are you doing to take care of yourself? It has to start with self.
Yeah. You know, I love the words you use, that devotion, the devotion to nurturing yourself. Just, I'm hoping that if you're listening, that really touches a spot in you, to devoting yourself to nurturing yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, it just really moves me, even as you said it. Whew.
So what are some of the ways that we do that, Mom? What are some of the ways that we share in this book about how you can devote to not only a spiritual practice, but to devote to intentional living every day?
Well, we teach about the power of our minds first, you know, and then when we start to get to grasp what some of those powers of our mind are, then we can put them into action. So if you're familiar with the 12 powers as Unity teaches them, an entire chapter in this book is devoted to one power after the other. And we have beautiful stories of our own stories and stories of some of our loved ones and stories from the world around us that give illustrations of how we can nurture our spiritual capacities. And just think about that. I mean, to be able to recognize that strength, for example, is natural to me,
that I can choose to stand strong even as my diagnosis might shift, or even as my circumstances might swirl around me, right? Even as things out of my control are happening, I am in control of my capacity to stand sturdy, right? To not waver in my knowledge of my wholeness, for example. Whew.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, this is my favorite chapter. I mean, if we had to say we had a favorite chapter, this is it, because it's the reinforcement of everything that we're sharing, you know, and doing it through stories of people that don't necessarily show just the triumph at the end, right? Again, we're not ending. This is a continuation that we're going to be going on. So I love that. Some of the stories that I shared in here were from earlier experiences in my life. And to look back now and see where I've come from that moment, you know, even in my understanding and reflection back on those things, and to know that it wasn't all neat and pretty, and it didn't all fit in this little box that we like to make it fit, you know? It's practical, but it also has a lot of heart, I feel, because you can compare it to your own experiences.
Oh, man. Yeah, they're very, our experiences and those of others that we wrote about are very relatable, even if they're not identical to your own experience. They're relatable as human experiences. And the thing that I really love what you said here, Alicia, that we do not wrap this all up in a tidy little package and say, here, if you read this book and do this step-by-step-by-step thing, you'll be all cured and all well for all time. That's not what this book is about. This is a book about learning to care for yourself and to find your inner capacities every day to be able to live in the midst of things that are going on with you without being undone by those things. That's power. That is real power. We have the power, as Charles Fillmore, co-founder of Unity, taught it. It's called the pivotal power of our consciousness. And that simply means to us, and as we teach it in the book, it means that we're both human and spiritual. We have these, Temple mentioned, you mentioned this early on, that we're multidimensional, that there's more to us than what we appear to be. And that human and spiritual of us means that we have a capacity greater than what we see with our own eyes or experience with our own five senses. And when we can begin to tune into that through some kind of daily practice, we have what we call the pivotal power. And that is the power to be able to take direction, not from the external things that are going on in our life, like to look out at what's happening and saying, that's what my life is about, but instead to turn our attention to the ineffable of us, the mystical of us, and to be able to say, my life, this is also my life. This is where I can gain the strengths and the capacities that I'm going to need.
Yeah, I love that.
So, Alicia, why don't you introduce the practices that support that, yeah?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. One of the chapters we have in here is, it's an A to Z list of intentional actions that you can do. And the importance of it is really that you have a choice. You know, we want people to feel empowered to say, this is what works for me. This is what doesn't work for me. There might be other things in that we haven't even thought about or that we didn't include that feel life affirming to you. And it's kind of just taking a step away from whatever's happening in that moment, that whether it's pain in your body, whether it's financial troubles, I mean, just name something, anything really. And you want to break up that negative or repetitive thinking that you have about that circumstance and choose to shift, do that pivotal shift to something that's really going to bring life back into your body and bring awareness. And I don't know, it just feels like tingly and exciting to be thinking about something else. So in this section, we're talking about things that are as simple as chanting or sitting in meditation, but it's 15 minutes of daily intentional practice. And I think, you know, one of the things I always like to share about this chapter that we were also really proud of is that nothing in here requires that you go out and purchase something. Everything that is included requires either nothing or something that would be really accessible to anyone in any situation. So whether you are in bed and can't move your body, there's still ways for you to bring these activities and modify them the way you need them to be. So that was something I really loved about this chapter.
Yeah, I agree. I love that about it too. There's in the whole alphabet of practices, there are at least a handful of things that any one of us would find that we might practice and find supportive. And they are such simple things, but they run the gamut. And here's the thing that I like to say about the 15 minutes. It's long enough to interrupt that cycle of sometimes swirling thoughts, right? The thought process of, you know, well, the doctor says this is never going to get better, or, you know, whatever that refrain is, or whatever, you know, whatever that sort of the focus of attention has been, we break that by turning our minds to something that stimulates our knowledge of our wholeness. And that's what these practices all are designed to do, to get us to feeling more alive rather than half dead, so to speak, right? And when we do that repeatedly, a little bit every day, 15 minutes is long enough to break that vibrational connection to those repetitive thought processes and literally flood our systems with feel-good chemicals that stimulate the very healing that we're after. So these are just not anything very small. These are really, really big deals. Every single one of these actions are really supportive. Yeah.
A big deal, but it's masked as something that's just so simple, something so effortless. You know, like last week, we had this beautiful rain that happened, and I'm fortunate enough to work from home right now, so I saw that the rain was starting, and I went out on my patio, and I tend to do, 15 minutes, take my breaks at work and spend it outside anyway, but being outside and closing my eyes and just listening to the rainfall was so restorative for me. And I came back and you feel tingly, you feel the energy, you feel life, you feel vibration of life.
That's beautiful.
It has to be intentional in the sense that I don't have to do that every day. I don't have to go outside every day, but what am I doing to fill myself up? What good can I bring into my life by what I'm choosing to do? That's the only way to think about it.
Yes, I love that. And I'll say for me, just as an example for me, one of the things that I've been doing recently is before I go to sleep at night, I sit upright in a meditation position in my bed, and I'm doing alternate nostril breathing. It's a yoga practice that's real easy to learn even online. You can find a YouTube about it or read about it even. But just alternate nostril breathing. You know, I've got a lot going on between the book and my full-time work, and then we're relocating. So there's a lot of packing and a lot of hurry up and wait going on and these kinds of things. So I can find my mind is just really churning. My thoughts are busy at night. And so this has been a very valuable practice to help me to fall asleep gently and rest well. It's just that 15 minutes of slowed breathing, alternate nostril. It's so beautiful and such a simple practice. Again, all I need is my own body to do it.
Yeah. I like you just brought up waiting, Mom. You just brought up waiting, which I think was another part of our book that was kind of different in terms of what are we waiting for? How, what's the benefit of waiting? All of that. Can you kind of talk about that?
Oh, my. Yeah, we're given so many mixed messages about waiting, aren't we? We're told, you know, to hurry up and wait. We're told to, you know, why wait? Just dive in. I mean, there's just so many contrary and confusing sets of messages. But we try to propose, if you're in a period of waiting, and that could be just as simple as you're waiting for more information, you know, right? If you've had some tests mm-hmm. done and you're waiting for those, for the results of those tests, or, you know, you're waiting to get a signal in order to make a decision. I mean, there's just so many points where we're needing to just be still and wait. And we like to propose that waiting is not a passive time. It's a time of being so centered within our own minds. You know, Temple, your show is about intentionality. That's what happens in waiting. It's a time of intentionality to know what it is, not necessarily even specifically a particular outcome, but we know that which we are after in a sort of a broad way. And as we just kind of rest into that and just into the trust that the universe is a benevolent field, a field of benevolence is the way I think about it, where, you know, nothing is set up for our harm. Everything is for our good. And, you know, we start to enter into that kind of energy in a time of waiting, but we're also preparing. This is a time where our power of imagination can come alive and we can begin to envision what life is like when this thing we're waiting on is fulfilled. And we begin to step into it energetically even beforehand. There's so much power in the wake.
Oh, it's so good. And that time is now. This is happening now. It's been happening through this entire COVID pandemic. This is that waiting time. And I think that people are looking now to say, okay, I've been at home for this past year. I have it. These are the things that I'm missing out on. Well, what are the things you've gained during this time? Because it's been such a time of reflection and change for people. And it's really brought to the surface, what do I want? What are my greatest desires? What am I doing yeah. now that's helping me get there? And what do I maybe need to ditch? You know?
Yeah,
so
it's
been such a powerful time of spiritual growth, and people making really big moves, and it's exciting and scary, and we're all sort of doing it. There's this collective energy of that.
Boy, I wonder, you know, this is something, if we have just another minute, Temple.
You sure do, of course. Yeah, you have a couple, three, actually, or more.
Good. Well, we include in this book a series of affirmations. At the end of each section, so at the end of the section about waiting, we have an affirmation that is specific to honor your waiting. So I thought I'd love to read this affirmation to those of you who are listening, so you can see if this has some value for you. And it's just one of 20-some affirmations in the book. To honor your waiting, I am not thwarted by hysterical imaginings. I am a deliberate creator. I master my ability to wait gracefully while at the edge of my seat in positive expectancy. My twin capacities of stillness and action are not in conflict or competition. I have room for each in turn. I sense and respond to each in turn. I sit with desire, remaining still. I dance with desire, readying myself. Waiting is not missing out, procrastinating, or settling. Rather, waiting is my time devoted to wondrous, desirable possibilities.
Wow, that is very powerful. And it just
Well,
hits it right in there, doesn't it? I mean, and you know, often, I mean, it's words, and words have these powers that we make an agreement to give them, right? And I always love what Joan Bernacinco said, that there's a space between the no longer and the not yet. And that's a powerful space.
it is.
That's a
It is.
powerful space. And I agree with you, Alicia. I don't know of a time where so many people have just, and I'm talking obviously people I know, have decided to pick up and relocate and change their whole life during this time that they've been in a, if you will, forced time out, or something that was forced upon us to change our everyday habits. It's been really cool watching people, even your mom, you know, decide, well, I'm
Yeah,
gonna just move now and I'm going here. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, it's allowing. We're allowing ourselves to really just be in the moment. But it's not just like, oh, I'm just going to go do this. It is intentional. It's absolutely intentional because you've taken the space, and I love that word. You've taken the space. You've given room to really think about what you want in this life, and now you're going out and you're creating that. So it's empowerment.
It is. It is. Yeah, and I
It's
want to say about the affirmations too, that we really approach affirmations somewhat differently from what is very popular. And you might have heard that in these affirmations. What we really aim for is what is true right here and now. What capacity can I affirm and claim and anchor in for myself, so that I'm not affirming, I'm not promising some kind of a future. I'm not kind of predicting an outcome as an affirmation. No. The affirmation's what's real and true right now. What is my capacity right here and now? And to me, I find that very important, especially when I am experiencing unwanted conditions, that I find that right in the midst of them, there I have power, that I don't have to wait until some time as those conditions have resolved in order for me to be okay. And that is so important. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. All right. So, Temple, I think we're in good shape.
Oh, we're in good shape, but sorry, I forgot I muted when my little dog started trying to do the radio show too. But no, I was just going to say, you know, to end this on just a real profound note, Linda, I'm glad you waited to write this book, because had you not waited, Alicia wouldn't be a co-author with you. So there you go.
Right.
Right.
Ha, 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 ha.
Oh, what a pleasure. I've loved being with you and everyone. You can go to the letter ur-divine.com and find out more of how you can be involved with this great work. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Do you want to deepen your connection to the divine? Speed up your progress on the spiritual path? Then tune in to the Spirit Matters podcast. I'm the host, Philip Goldberg, and I interview experts with wisdom, insight, and practical guidance for every seeker of truth. Spirit Matters on the MindBodySpirit.fm network. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.